Hi, welcome to the Theophilus Theologue podcast. I'm Daniel Otto Jack Peterson, and we have made it to episode 2. Thanks so much to everyone for tuning in and listening to episode 1. That was an experiment to see how it would go, to get some feedback, see if people wanted me to go on. And we've had something like, it's nearing, I think, 200 downloads and plays of the podcast, which is great, I think, for me, for a beginning podcast. If it's only 100 or a couple hundred people that this is useful for, that's more than enough for me to be motivated to keep doing it. It's probably, you know, nothing in the big sphere of awesome podcasts and what have you, but that's totally fine with me. So thank you for listening, and thanks for all the amazing, encouraging, positive feedback. Some critical engagement with what I said and some suggestions about, you know, where to go and things, but all really quite positive and encouraging. I mean, completely positive and encouraging. So if you want to speak negatively into this podcast, it's not too late. You need to speak up. You need to write something on the podcast or write something to me on Facebook or something, and maybe you can stop this before it gets any worse. But no, I'm totally open to that. But it was encouraging feedback. So on we go. We're going to keep doing it, at least for a little while here. We've moved to episode 2. Now, one thing I'd like to say in terms of your interaction with this podcast is I would love it if, because I did get quite a few comments and things, but I would love it if people made those comments here on the Podomatic website where the podcast is, you know, put up on, because the reason being, I don't mind talking to you guys on Facebook and what have you, that's great, but in addition to that, it'd be great if people were making their comments here, because I think people may be reaching this podcast from a number of different ways, not just through my Facebook, so it would be useful to see everybody cross, you know, cross-pollinating, if you will, that way it can be a bigger, better, fruitful discussion, and you guys can talk to each other more or see other people's comments. You don't have to do that, but that's a suggestion that I think would be good. If you want to come over to the website and comment there, that'd be great. But again, feel free to keep commenting elsewhere to let me know or whatever you want to say. So moving on here for episode 2, you may have noticed that in episode 1, I gave it a little name besides episode 1, and that was Proslogion for Boys and Girls. And now I have to confess that I used the wrong word, which really hurts my pride. but I said Proslogion, which is the name of Anselm, the theologian, medieval theologian Anselm, his prayer, theological prayer that he did with some great stuff in it, where we get in philosophy of religion, the ontological argument, which I'm not going to get into, except maybe to say I like it. For those who know what it's about, that's my little vote for it. I actually dig it. I didn't years and years ago, but it's grown on me. It's become more and more convincing, very interesting argument. Who knows? Maybe we'll have a podcast about that someday, but it is not today. But that's where he talked about that, and I believe that's where he used his phrase, faith-seeking understanding, which is a great way to sum up theology to some degree. Faith-seeking understanding, and that's a useful phrase as well. Maybe we'll talk about the proslogion someday, but that is not the word I meant to use. The word I meant to use is prolegomena. Prolegomena, prolegomena for boys and girls is I've now renamed it, so my error is erased, except now I'm recording it again. But anyway, prolegomena for boys and girls is what I called that episode, part one, and we're going on with that here, part two. And what that little term, little technical term means is it's the things you say first. That's kind of the words in there. You've actually got your word logos in there again, like we talked about last time. So many things have that word, like theology with theos and logos, and on it goes. But that's kind of fit in there. That Lego word is related to logos, etc. But prolegomena is the first things you want to say. Sometimes it's called first theology. In philosophy, it's called first philosophy, and it kind of does the groundwork and gets some basics out of the way, sets some standards, builds some foundations, looks at foundations, what have you. And it's quite a big area, really, of study. Many, many systematic theologies will start with, whether they call it that or not, a prolegomena. They'll say within evangelical Christian theology, it very often starts with a doctrine of the Word of God, doctrine of Scripture, doctrine of revelation, the fact that God speaks to us, because, you know, that's, as I said last time, that's largely what gets theology going. The fact, I said, that we're made in the image of God, and the fact that he then speaks to us, calls to us, and calls us to respond to him, and then all of a sudden you're talking about God. You're doing logos about the theos, and, you know, theology begins there. And so, you know, establishing that, as many theologians do, this doctrine of revelation and stuff, is a way of getting theology started and setting some things in place about where we're going, why we're going there, how we're going to go there, and so on. And probably other theologians have started in slightly different places for various reasons and so forth. But that's kind of what we're doing here. It's just kind of continuing on some groundwork and some opening comments and things, setting some things in there. And like I say, it's a big area, frankly. I mean, you can really go on about it. If I understand this right, there's a theologian called Kevin Van Hooser, who I've only read bits and pieces of. Very interesting. I'm really, really wanting to check out more and more of him. But as I recall, in an interview about his latest book, or a very recent book, I don't know if he's got another one since then, I think it's called something like Remythologizing Theology, something to that effect, which is an amazing title and concept and idea. Shows a lot of promise. I don't know where he's going with that, but wow, I'm excited about that. But I believe he said, and he's written, you know, probably a dozen books or more, I don't know. But up until this latest book, all these, you know, half dozen books before that, he was doing essentially prolegomena, first theology, clearing the way for what he really wanted to say, and that this latest book is his first book of theology. I think that's kind of hilarious. But it shows how long you can really rest there and kind of do some stuff. And it's tempting to me, you know, just to call this the prolegomena podcast, and we'll always stay right there and do all this foundation stuff and opening stuff and these sorts of things, but we won't, don't worry. We will freely range around theology, which will bring me to my next point as soon as I explain why I called it boys and girls, prolegomena for boys and girls. And that's just to say, you know, we're doing this groundwork and we're talking about this august thing called theology, but at the same time, I want us to keep in mind a couple things that I said from last time, and that's theocomedy, that there is a comedy and a comic sense that keeps us humble and helps us realize how clownish we are to be finite beings trying to speak about the infinite one, and how funny that is. And so we can laugh at ourselves, and yet we're called to do it. It's real. It's part of being a human being, and we theologize. So it's funny, and yet it's essential. And that way we can have a sense of humor and be humble and provisional about what we say and so forth. And also what I said last time too, that there's a deep sense of wonder about theology if you're doing it right, I think. And I talked about, you know, being a cosmonaut, you know, plying the blackness in the starways, you know, in the universe, and that's how I feel often when I'm doing theology. I mean, it's that huge to me, and I feel so small and so in awe and you know, in need of guidance and help to navigate these abysses of theology. And so prolegomena for boys and girls speaks of, you know, we're doing this groundwork in theology with a sense of humor and a sense of wonder. We're boys and girls engaging in this amazing, you know, discipline. That speaks to the little subtitle we've got for these opening episodes. And that's the thing is, you know, some people who were listening, friends of mine, very astute listeners, you know, suggested, you know, people were wondering, so it'll be interesting to see where you go with this, you know, and some people suggested, hey, maybe you should do, you know, a historical survey, do some historical theology, show us how we got here, you know, go from the biblical witness to the beginnings of theology, where how does theology come out of that biblical witness, which I did say last time that, you know, that theology comes from story. Theology comes from that huge biblical narrative, and out of that develops and grows what we today call theology. And that would be very interesting, and I would love to try to do that. I wouldn't say I'm actually really qualified to do that and have you know, have the expertise for that, but I certainly will speak to it when and if I feel that I can. I will say offhandedly that I can recommend a great book on that that I've read. It's the only book I've read that deals very specifically with historical theology, and that's the whole point of the entire book. And that is a book called The Story of Christian Theology, by Roger Olson, O-L-S-O-N, I believe. Could be E-N. No, there it is on my bookshelf. It's O-L-S-O-N, The Story of Christian Theology by Roger Olson. A very fat book, but it goes from, you know, the New Testament right on up to the 20th. And he gets into the late 20th or early 21st century and the latest developments in theology. Wonderfully enthralling book. I just loved it. And he's a very, very gifted writer in just making things plain. And it's not easy to make some of that plain. And it's going to be difficult if you want to read this at times, but it's a good read. It's a very, you know, it's a history of ideas sort of read. And he really keeps it at as accessible of a level as you can for these things. And it's a great, you know, if you like history and things, and the history of, I like the history of ideas better than anything else in terms of historical writing. And if you like that kind of thing, wow, you know, it's just a joy and a pleasure to read. And he really gives you a good survey, a good, what's the word I'm looking for? He really shows a lot of different sides to things, and he has his own sides. You know, he chooses to stand in certain traditions and streams of theology, and outside of other ones. And yet I think he's quite fair in showing where all these streams are coming from and going, and everything, you know, from, you know, primitive Christianity to, you know, the Catholic, Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox divide, and then the Protestant Reformation and where things have gone since then, as well as the different, you know, streams and traditions within, say, just Protestantism and so forth. So it's a really good book, and I highly recommend it. So if I can't give you historical theology, I can at least recommend one, I think, quite quality source on that. I will mention another theologian that loves his historical theology and does lots of it. I think he has actually one full book about historical theology. It might just be called that, historical theology, is the British theologian. Roger Olson's an American. This is a British theologian called Alistair McGrath, M-C-G-R-A-T-H, Alistair McGrath. My thing about him is just that any book I've read by him, I'm pretty sure, whenever he tries to talk about theology and describe ideas and explain things, he goes into history. That's just his default. He's going to go, well, this idea comes from this theologian and out of this situation and whatever, you know, and he just kind of does that. So you can get some good stuff from him that way, just checking out anything. He's got quite a few books of, you know, sort of introduction to theology and that kind of thing, and I'd recommend any of those. My favorite book by him is actually called The Twilight of Atheism, written not too long ago, I think. And that's a history of ideas book, except it's a history of a theology. I talked about last time how the philosopher Alvin Plantinga called atheist philosophers a theologians who were doing a theology. That's a history of a theology and from ancient times forward to today, and really, really, I just loved it. Just it's a light touch, sort of tasty intellectual read. Again, history of ideas, not a super long book. Kind of like listening to a good Radio 4 program if you're in Britain, or what's the American? You guys are all shouting it at me. And I can't think of it. Public radio. What's that called? Anyway, the public radio station in America that does all that. that kind of thing. And it kind of reads like that. He's a, you know, super knowledgeable guy, but it's just a really light touch. And I found it fairly easy read, enjoyable read, good ideas, good thoughts. I think quite respectful, really, to atheists. I mean, they won't like the message that he feels it's kind of exhausted itself and running into a certain twilight. And of course, there's potentially evidence to the contrary with new atheism and so forth, depending on how you interpret all that. But he was an atheist as a young man and then became a Christian. So, I mean, I think he's quite respectful to the atheist position and puts it in its best light, and so forth. So, Alistair McGrath, you might try him out if you're looking for historical theology as well. But I think the nature of what I'm going to do, certainly for now, this is not a course in theology. We're not going to do systematic theology where first we go through the prolegomena, and then we go into the doctrine of God and his attributes, and then we go into, soteriology and look at salvation and atonement and justification and what have you, and eventually get into ecclesiology with the church, and then, eschatology with end times, and et cetera, et cetera. We're not going to do that, nor are we going to do the historical survey or any, biblical theology where you go, kind of by the books of the Bible and say, Jeremiah's theme was this, and Isaiah's theme was this, and Paul's, and there's John and what have you, and big streams across the biblical books of, all of that stuff is juicy, lovely, yummy, wonderful theology. I've read portions of all those sorts of approaches and hugely benefited from them all. But what we're doing here is more of it's a little fireside chat. Just having a friendly fireside chat here. So we'll kind of range around, I think. Try to be coherent eventually, maybe a bit rambling at first, but try to find some real streams that we kind of follow out and follow through. That's probably the nature of how we're going to do this. Now, like I said, this idea of theology putting at least me in a place of awe and wonder, right? This cosmonaut or astronaut out in space, small. There's something else that happens there. Something else. And this is going to be my one main point for this podcast, the kind of one thing I'm going to say. There's something else that happens as you're in that awe and wonder looking at the idea of God, that there is a God, that he has spoken to us, and that he is like this, that, or the other, and perhaps unlike this, that, or the other. Came across a great meme this week. Not a big fan of memes, per se, but they're clever enough. And actually, I'm going to say something theological about memes, hopefully next time. So hold me to that. It was a picture of who's the actor? The guy who plays the lead role in the movie Fight Club. Man, everything is escaping. All basic popular culture references are escaping my mind today. Brad Pitt, there we go, as his role in the movie Fight Club. And if you've seen that, you'll get this joke. But if you've seen that, sorry, and you know this term from theology, so it's a really small scope for who's going to get this joke. But I just thought it was hilarious. It shows a picture of him, and then it says across the top, the first rule of apophatic theology is, and then down at the bottom, you don't talk about apophatic theology. And of course, in the film, it's the first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club. And apophatic theology is theology that takes its basic methodology to be what not to say about God. Don't speak about God. You can't say positive things about God and use analogies and so forth. You have to only say negative things about God, as in what he's not. God is not, limited by space, let's say, or whatever it is. I probably just butchered apophatic theology. I that's not really the tradition I come from, though I'm coming to hugely appreciate it and see its inherent value. And I think you kind of have to work apophatic theology together with being able to say positive things about God and using analogies, analogous thought about God and so forth. we're getting way off topic there. The point being that when you're in this place of awe and wonder in the face of God, or this, for some of you, this potential or possible God, this concept and idea of God, and it kind of silences you and puts you in this place of wonder and awe, and something else happens there, right there, as well, potentially. It certainly does for me. But I'm not going to tell you what that is just yet. I'm going to sneak up on it by bringing in a little bit more of my autobiography. And that is, again, really talking about my father and his background in theology. And as I mentioned last time, he went to seminary. Now, I'm going to let out a little secret this time, a dirty secret for many people out there. And that is that my dad was a minister. I said that last time. That's not the dirty secret. He was a Southern Baptist minister. Now, there's booing and hissing going on from some people when they hear that. I don't really, you know, I have to be honest, I don't totally get the whole Southern Baptist thing. And it, you know, I just know that eventually it's become this thing that, you know, it's they're the baddies, you know, and they're the fundamentalists, or I don't know what, you know, because I don't know a whole lot about it. I grew up Southern Baptist. I did. I promise. And I was kind of paying attention, but not really. And really, when I became a Christian as a young man for myself, by my own, you know, sort of choice and stuff, not just because I was raised that way, I really cut my teeth elsewhere in terms of discipleship. The Calvary Chapel churches, which maybe probably people booing and hissing about that as well. Calvary Chapel, Horizon, Christian Fellowship, these churches are where I cut my discipleship teeth and Bible reading teeth and these sorts of things. And, you know, my theological teeth, I'll talk about this another time, weren't so much directly through Calvary Chapel, kind of an eclectic group of sources. And I want to talk about that at a different point. But my dad was a Southern Baptist minister. But if you hear that, you may get the wrong idea. He was not your typical Southern Baptist minister. He, you know, just by appearance, I mean, he was, you know, he wore, I recall as a kid, you know, this constantly wore this leather vest and a big wooden cross around his neck. And he had this big bushy beard and kind of longish hair and stuff. And he often wore a suit as well, but he also, you know, wore this leather vest and jeans and stuff. And most of my friends always thought he was a biker. They're like, "Is your dad a biker?" I was like, "No, he's a pastor." They're like, "What are you talking about?" And some of my friends called him the satanic pastor and stuff. I don't think I ever told him that, actually. I thought it was pretty funny, but I didn't want to be disrespectful, I guess. But anyway, so he didn't, you know, quite look the part. And that was because he really came out of in the 70s, this whole thing called the Jesus movement, this kind of hippie, post-hippie Christian, sometimes pseudo-Christian sort of movement. And that's really where the Calvary Chapels and things came out of as well. So he came out of this, you know, this Jesus rock, you know, rock and roll sort of background. He played piano and keyboards and all these rock and roll bands. And he was also called jokingly and friendly in a friendly manner by his fellow Southern Baptists. Often he was called Bapticostal because he liked, you know, Pentecostal being people who the denominations and so forth that speak in tongues and worship in a more lively manner and these sorts of things. Well, I never heard my dad speak in tongues. I don't know that he did or not, but he liked to raise his hands, you know, in worship and shout amen, you know, and things like this. He was a character, kind of, and had a lot of soul too. Quite a soulful white dude, in his way. Jazzy too. He could be like a jazz announcer sometimes. But anyway, that's the sort of Southern Baptist he was, in a sense, you know. So he didn't quite fit that mold, in some ways. And interestingly, not totally theologically either. He, you know, was an Orthodox Christian and, you know, had the basic, beliefs that, you know, Orthodox Christians have, and that even, you know, classic sort of evangelical Christians have. But he had this kind of openness. He loved theology so much. He really liked to look around. And in addition to people like Francis Schaeffer, I remember him reading all the time, and C.S. Lewis, and I'd see him reading, you know, Hans Küng, which maybe one or two people have heard of him. And I don't know much about where he fits on the spectrum, but he's a Catholic theologian and stuff. And, you know, some things that even as I became a Christian as a young man, I was kind of offended. What are you reading that for, Dad? Because I was a closed-minded know-it-all. But one of the things he described to me, because he had this real interest in neo-orthodoxy, so people like Dietrich Bonhoeffer and others, was his encounter with Karl Barth, the neo-Orthodox theologian Karl Barth. And what he said was when he was at seminary there, and I don't know if he had to study Karl Barth or if he just was browsing the library as he does and pulled down some volumes. He was talking about, he was looking at his Dogmatics, which is many volumes long, and was pulled some down and was reading. And this was the thing, he'd been warned against, you know, Karl Barth by his Southern Baptist tradition and stuff. And, you know, oh, don't go for that neo-orthodoxy. It's wrong for this, that, and the other reason and stuff. But he was checking it out. And he said, what changed his mind about Karl Barth was he was sitting there reading what he's expounding in theology. And I don't know which area of theology he was looking at. And he said, I just found myself worshiping God. His heart was just overflowing with praise for God, for how good and awesome he was in whatever aspect he was studying there. And he thought, well, this guy can't be all wrong and all bad if I'm sitting here worshiping God because of what he's writing here. Now, you know, maybe God's gracious and just worked through, you know, somebody that's just totally dodgy, you know, and my dad was able to worship anyway. But I don't think it's quite that. What I want to say here then is there's two more, and that's what I'm going to talk about next time. But one more element in some of these basics of theology and methodology and things to look for, besides, say, the comic aspect and the sense of wonder, is I want to say another key element of theology is doxology. Doxology. So the Greek word doxa, for usually translated, I believe, as it's definitely translated a lot as glory. I don't know if it's usually translated that way. And then you have your logos word again. And so it's this, you know, logos, reasoning, talking, expressing the glory of God. So it's often used, it means praise. You know, doxology is praising God. And that's really, that's where theology is meant to be at, right there in doxology, whether that's, you know, theology comes out of doxology, certainly it should lead to doxology, and that's what my father was finding in reading Karl Barth. And I think that's another good sign. It's not everything. It doesn't mean everything the person said is right or true or whatever. Same thing as I said last time with paradox, you know, it's just a potential sign that things are on the right track when studying God, you find that you have slipped from reasoning about him and understanding into pure worship, just extolling him and saying, you are amazing and wonderful. Worship is, you know, more than just saying those things. It's also just saying, I give my life to you and just living in his presence and so forth. So I think that's another good effect, good aspect of theology that should be there. And it's interesting too, that there's that logos and there's this doxa, the glory of God, and so often we find ourselves in theology. The whole idea of theology is to, you know, to talk about the unspeakable, the incomparable one, to say something about him, and yet and here too to express the inexpressible, the glory of God. And I think of the novelist Nick Hornby, in a book I read of his once. I think it's called 31 Songs, Some Amount of Songs. Actually, that'd be a great book title, Some Amount of Songs. But anyway, where at one point he said, you know, as a, you know, people talk about the ineffable, you know, that something you just can't express, it's just so immense, the ineffable. And he says, you know, I gotta say, as a writer, I'm pretty committed to kind of finding everything pretty effing effable. And that's exactly how he said it. I'm not abbreviating him. He spelled it E-F-F-I-N-G, pretty effing effable. So I think that, strangely, there's something there about theology too, and doxology, that, you know, it is ineffable. It's amazing. It's beyond words. And yet here we are finding ourselves talking about it and indeed praising about it, composing hymns to this incomparable one, and so forth. So, and that leads to this thought about what theology is. And one of the things I said, it can be, you know, this fight, you know, for right doctrine, making sure we defend it. Sure, there's a time and a place for that. I don't think it has to be strictly and always centrally about that. And I said, there's a sense of wonder and exploration to it. And here we have a sense of worship to it. And orthodoxy is the word for right doctrine. And some people have, and I believe in orthodoxy and right doctrine, but some people have said, oh, no, it's not about that. It's about orthopraxy. It's about right practice. It's about how we live our lives following Jesus and so forth. Well, I agree with that too. And I don't think it's an either or, it's a both and. But there, Roger Olson that I mentioned earlier points out another aspect to things, and that's orthopathy. For, you know, pathos, our feelings, emotions, and passions, that we need the right emotions in relation to God. And I think the sense of wonder and awe and this sense of worship toward him is one of those right emotions that are a good sign that we're on the right track. It's not everything, but emotions are important. And to have the right emotions are important. For me to have the right emotions toward my child is a key thing in my parenting of that child. I have to have those, or something about, there's a huge dimension missing to how I relate to that child. And it's the same with us toward God, that there needs to be right emotions in how we relate to him. And theology, this sometimes abstract, sometimes abstruse, as I said last time, complex and very intellectual thing can actually affect that and must and should and does. And in fact, I think you'll find your emotions aren't as engaged without theology. So that's kind of the basic thing I'm saying in this episode, which will lead us into one more aspect that I for sure want to talk about in this prolegomena element to theology next time, and that is aesthetic, looking at beauty and so forth. So that's it. Thanks for listening, and I hope we'll have another one soon.